Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. It's my favorite time of the week because I get to answer your questions along with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. We tag team on questions that you send us to radioprogram@AOL.com, and it's an opportunity to get answers to some of the, your most pressing health and nutrition conundrums. So how you doing, Layla? What's going on?
Okay. And you know, conundrums are right.
Right. That's a real dilemma.
But you know, maybe more than we'd like.
You know, as soon as I said that, I thought to myself that maybe the plural of conundrum is conundra.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because it's kind of, I guess it's a Latin word, but I've never...
But I'm not sure myself.
I'm satisfied with conundrums. But anyway, so let's not quibble about English grammar. All right. So before we get to questions, wanted to, you know, this week, you know, we in the office, we run back and forth to each other's desks and show each other studies of interest. And this week, what kind of got my goat was a study that assails the paleo diet. We're going to talk about that in just a second, but as many of our listeners know, I've been undertaking a trial of a version of the paleo diet, the Whole 30, and I did for 30 days, and I'm still enjoying it into, I don't know, I must be, yeah, you know something? Today is February, okay, so I'm actually two months into it.
I remember you told me you started around Christmas time.
Started around Christmas time, so then we did you know, right up through January and then now right into late February. So 2 months of the diet, and I really like it. And you know, even though I'm entitled to go off it because it's a 30-day challenge, I pretty much stuck to it, you know, with the exception of, you know, Super Bowl time, I had a, you know, a glass of wine, you know, went out with some people, had a glass of wine, you know, there's no alcohol on the diet. But I mostly have stuck to the no alcohol principle, the no sugar principle, the no grains principle, no cheese, not even any legumes. And I'm enjoying it and, you know, cooking creatively. And so energy's good. Cravings are at bay. My athletic performance, I'm really happy with what's happening there. And aches and pains have somewhat abated, which is great. And then the other
thing is... That's very, very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
When you talk about aches and pains and, you know, people can have aches and pains for no real reason or anything like that. But when they find that they eliminate certain foods, like even something as seemingly innocuous as legumes, right?
Right. And it could, you for know, me, it could be peanut butter
because
I was really addicted to peanut butter. There's no question.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so now you're switching to almond butter, right? Or macadamia nut butter.
Various types of, I'm having even sunflower butter, which is an interesting substitute.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So, you know, doing pistachio butter I have, you know, macadamia butter, I have all these different. So, but of interest is I undertook this not with the goal of losing weight. I thought I was at a pretty decent weight. I was pretty happy with my weight. You know, I don't weigh myself very often. I don't have a scale in the house, but I was in the gym this morning and about to take a swim, and I was sitting there in my bathing suit, and I said, before I get in the pool, let me just weigh myself because I have a nice digital scale there. I jumped on the scale, and to my relative amazement, I had lost about 6 pounds from my base weight, which is usually 166, 168. Sometimes, you know, up to 172, depending on, you know, what I'm doing. And I was down to 163.6, which is maybe a 4 to 6 pound weight loss. So that was interesting that even though I'm eating a ton and I'm, you know, really satisfied with the food, I mean, I'm not starving, I'm not hungry all the time, I really managed to drop some weight. So this offers, I think, a lot of hope to our listeners. And, you know, I think the issue is, you know, don't do it for, you know, a week. Don't do it for 2 weeks. Do it for, you know, 90 days or do it for 6 months. And I think gradually, even the most refractory weight problems will begin to respond. I mean, there could be other things in the way, you know, like a thyroid problem or, you know, something else that's slowing you down. But I think that's made a difference.
But at least commit to it for the whole 30 days.
Right. Nonetheless,
which is the premise and a great idea, yeah.
Nonetheless, and I shared the lurid headlines with you, is that researcher claims that study suggests paleo diet makes you fat and sick. Something to that effect.
Oh, no. Here we go again.
Yeah. And so he did a study.
Yeah, well,
he did a study. And
so at the study, they did it with mice.
You looked at the actual study and you analyzed it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They looked at mice and they only had the mice on the diet for 8 weeks. But in going even further, you know how we always have to look at methodology to see if anything is flawed. Get a roll of this.
Yeah.
And I'm reading from the study. The carbohydrate content of the low-carb, high-fat paleo diet was exclusively derived from simple sugar.
I haven't had any. I'm like so not having sugar on this diet. That's what it's all about.
Messed up.
Right.
If they use this as the source of carbohydrate for the mice, nothing's going to get better.
Well, wait a minute. Last time I checked, the vast majority of people that I know are not rodents. I mean, admittedly, some, exhibit some of the characteristics, but the vast majority of people are not mice. Now, mice, they eat a lot of stuff, but, the last time I saw a mouse eat a porterhouse steak rich in saturated fat and cholesterol, I can't remember when I saw that. They actually prefer eating grains. They eat grains. You leave some bread around or something. Or they like cheese. Okay, fine. Cheese isn't on the diet. So how are they going to extrapolate the finding? Well, okay, the researcher claims that we share a lot of genes with mice. Well, we do share a lot of genes with mice, but that doesn't necessarily mean that feeding fat pellets with a little bit of sugar to mice is an appropriate experimental model for evaluating the effects of a paleo diet in humans. I'm sorry. Look, it's one thing to do a study and say, okay, we saw this, in a very modest way, scientific way, saying, this raises some questions. We did the study with mice and then the researcher would qualify it by saying, mice aren't humans. But this researcher, got on a phone to all the media and started to claim that this research was trashing the paleo diet. And I think that is a kind of a violation of scientific decorum. I think scientists should be reasonable and dignified in their interpretation of their science. I mean, they're not maybe it got him a spot on BBC One in England. I think the study was an English study. It's really not relevant. The study is flawed. The animal model is not realistic. And so what they're saying is that it could make diabetes worse. My goodness, we see so many patients going on this type of diet.
With added sugar. Yum. Fat pellets with added sugar. Yeah. Let's feed that to all diabetics. What will happen?
It's a calorie bomb. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. What's worse is, Dr. Hoffman, and anybody who knows me has heard me talk about this over and over. The scientific research has to be valid and reliable, and everything must point to the methodology. And I just recited from the study itself, the carbohydrate portion of this deems this whole thing completely a waste of money, completely invalid, completely unreliable. You can't replicate it anymore. I mean, forget about it.
Yeah.
What bothers me is the money that is spent on this very, very flawed research methodology.
Right. And
that's my problem with all of this.
And I got to say that some of the research on nutrition is very poorly conceived and very biased. People proceed from their own viewpoint, which is often researchers have a chip on their shoulder. They want to prove that a vegetarian diet or a grain-based diet is superior to a diet that incorporates fat. They're still kind of operating from that deck of cards, which is kind of 1980s thinking about the harmful effects of fat and cholesterol. So
here's the difference between a very good scientist and a very not so good scientist. The very good scientist is going to have an idea or a hypothesis and then spend the rest of their career trying to disprove it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So anybody who's married to a particular idea, like a vegetarian diet or even like a paleo diet or something else, as good scientists, we have to have our antenna up in the air and not only lean and check the research that's going to be in favor of our hypothesis. We have to, as good scientists, go out of our way to disprove what we think to be correct.
Right, and always walk around with a sense of caution and skepticism.
Of humility.
Yeah, and humility.
Yeah,
that's a great word for it.
Of humility,
yes, that-
of, you know... I mean, nutrition is still such a very, very new science, and now with the advent of nutritional genomics and personalized nutrition based on your genetics, your certain SNPs and polymorphisms, I mean, there's just so much happening now, and at the end of the day, we will always have more questions than we do answers.
Very well said. And, you know, we'll leave it at
you
that.
Know? And that's not a satisfactory answer to anybody who's listening, but that's simply the reality, and we're doing our best. And that's all we can do.
Thank you for that.
Okay, soapbox over. I'm sorry.
Right. end of sermon. Okay, so...
end of sermon.
So we... Look, and by the way, for some people, you know, and I've gotten really kind of a lot of controversial feedback after I posted my experience with this diet. Some people mm-hmm. embrace it, and I'm really happy that some people,
yes.
Based on my example, have said, you know, the food looks really good, and I'm, you know, when you describe it, it sounds so appealing, and then they've tried it, and then they've gotten marvelous results. Good for them. Great. And
yeah.
The other people who say, look, I can't conceive of life without all those foods. I mean, it's just not worth it. I'd rather have, you know, delicious French bread with my meals, a glass of wine. You know, how could you possibly be so idiotic as to suggest that, you know, any, you know, normal person should undertake such deprivation? I get that. I get that, that some people live in a realm where the aesthetics of eating is important.
Yeah.
Normalcy is important. You know, the convenience of just, you know, traveling and selecting food without worrying about the contents of the food. I get that. But, you know, if you want to really optimize your health and your nutrition, and you're willing to, you know, spend the time and allocate the energy and resources to it, it's a worthwhile experiment. You know, it's kind of like,
yeah.
Why would anyone want to climb Mount Everest? I mean, it's an extraordinary thing, but it is, you know, a feat that for some people is worth undertaking. Let's put it that way. So this is kind of like the Mount Everest of nutrition.
The other thing is when you talk about normalcy, most people who believe that they just feel well and everything is fine and good, so they're
yeah.
going to keep their French
yeah.
bread and they're going to keep their wine.
Yeah.
However, many of these people don't realize that they may have habituated to what they believe is normal
yes.
for them,
yeah.
and they may further qualify that saying, well, at my age.
Well, that's the other thing.
Never going to buy.
A lot of people will say, hey, guess what? You know, like I'm 45 or I'm, you know, 52 or I'm 61.
Right.
I'm going to feel, you know, I'm not going to feel so good. I'm going to feel lakey. That's my lot in life. But if you don't want to accept that, if you want to go past that and experience a higher level of wellness, I mean, hey, there's no question that as you age, you might, you know, decline in endurance and overall energy. But mm-hmm. I think you can really optimize well under your ears. I think a recent example, you know, from the news is Antonin Scalia. He was the Supreme Court justice. And this is
yeah.
a guy who – this is a guy, brilliant guy. I mean, obviously a you know, brilliant mm-hmm. You know, judicial genius, you know, whether you like his politics or not. But like I've always really acknowledged to be a sharp guy. But from the standpoint of nutrition and lifestyle, he didn't really – care that much about that because, you know, he was a bit of a bon vivant. He liked to eat his pasta. You know, he was overweight. According to the latest medical report, he was diabetic and he had coronary artery disease. Did he undertake a very drastic lifestyle change? No, because it wasn't his personal orientation to go for it. He was more about, you know, reading you know, articles about legal interpretation. That was his passion, and his passion was not about overall health and wellness, and he allocated most of his resources to intellectual endeavors, shall we put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's how do you want it to go down? You know, it's your life. You're entitled to lead it the way you want to. And we can advocate for the paleo diet for people who want to explore a new avenue towards wellness. And for some people, it may seem, you know, obsessive and crazy.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Well, you know, on that note, I would like to read a message. We got an email
from
Bob.
Yes, let's hear about
talking about this low-carb diet. Bob writes, Layla and Dr. Hoffman, just a note to relay some great news based on following your recommendations. Bob writes, both my wife and I were diagnosed with osteopenia several years ago. We started to get on vitamin D, strontium, calcium, various other supplements, all of these things. 3 years later, we were scanned, and we were both well within the normal range. And then we embarked on a low-carb, high-fat diet about 3 years ago also. And Bob had his routine cardiac checkups due to family history and all of that. Got the results back. Echo stress test, normal. Cardiac echo, normal. Everything is normal. And Bob is just so thrilled and happy and eating this way and being a triathlete, by the way.
Right.
On a low-carb, high-fat diet.
And
very, very happy camper.
Right. Of interest is that I think he had a pre-test and a post-test, mm-hmm. both looking at his carotid arteries and his coronary arteries. And not only did they see a slowing of the progression, they saw actually, to their amazement, they saw an improvement. And this is when he went on a diet which I guess these Australian researchers would say will kill you, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, my goodness, all
that
fat.
Fat pellets with added sugar, I don't think I'd recommend that to not even a mouse anyway.
I'm pretty sure there's the equivalent of that somewhere on the grocery aisles here. In your nearest supermarket. And by the way, Bob, a shout out to Bob because he listens to these podcasts and radio programs faithfully. Bob lives in Coral Gables, Florida. And when I was in Florida, Bob said, hey, I'll join you for a bike ride. And I'm sorry, I just didn't manage to get the logistics of that together. But he's an inveterate bike rider, and it would have been fun to meet him. All right, questions. We've got questions.
We've got a question from Jocelyn. Last spring, my GP wanted to put me on Lexapro. Well, I guess he was thinking I have a serotonin imbalance, and this really didn't go over with me very well. Is there any other alternative than me going on Lexapro?
Okay. Well, you know, there's some facts. First of all, yes, but there's some facts missing from this. I'm not clear why the doctor formed the impression that this patient, presumably a female, correct?
Yes, Jocelyn.
Yeah. Jocelyn, needed to go on Lexapro. Sometimes, unfortunately, physicians, and especially male physicians, tend to listen to lots of complaints by female patients and wrongly conclude that they must be depressed, and that the answer to their depression is to mask their complaints with an antidepressant medication. I'm hoping that's the worst-case scenario. I'm hoping that that's not the case. Is Jocelyn really depressed? Does she share that she has, an inability to enjoy life, that she's very, very stressed and worried and anxious all the time, that she's lost her motivation? These would be some reasons that might get a doctor to suggest an antidepressant medication. So I don't know any of that. Now, are there alternatives? Oh, goodness, yes.
Sammy comes to mind.
Yeah, I just want to say up front, before we get into the alternatives, that, you know, look, there's a place for these antidepressants. I'm not one of these holistic doctors who says never, ever use them, because I've seen antidepressants create remarkable breakthroughs for some patients, and I would say, you know, a significant minority, but these medications can really be transformational. So if all else fails and you've tried all the natural stuff and you're really stuck, you know, life is short, so consider it. I know some patients are adamantly opposed to ever using that. They feel it's a crutch. They feel it's artificial. They feel it's potentially hazardous. But hey, you know, life is short, and you might grab the ring and get a benefit from some of these medications. So that being said,
right.
There are many alternatives. And first of all, you got to find out, are there any other causes for the depression? Is it a thyroid problem? Mm-hmm. Is it a low adrenal problem? Is it low DHEA? Is it a food intolerance? So, for example, a lot of patients experience clarity when they go on an elimination diet, like the paleo diet that I'm on. And they feel much better. They feel energized, you know, and on it goes. And there's so many, you know, vitamin, it could be a B12 deficiency and on. Could you have a MTHFR mutation, which requires that you get more methyl donors like folate, B12, B6, and so on and so on and so on. Omega-3 fatty acids, like how are you going to feel, how are you going to have a good mood if you have no omega-3 fatty acids?
Right.
We saw a kid the other day who has digestive problems. It takes virtually no fish or fish oil. His omega-3 fatty acids were abysmal. They were extremely low. And so how can he have a good mental outlook when his brain is literally desiccated, no omega-3 fatty acids to be found? So those are some of the things. But let's talk specific supplements. You started with SAMI. That's a plausible one. Tell us about that.
SAMI is probably a big one. I think in Europe, St. John's wort is much more popular.
Yeah.
I think the reason I often won't recommend St. John's wort is it interacts with so many different medications.
Precisely. Right. Exactly. That's
I kind of really back away from it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
so SAMI
can be
might
effective.
Be a good idea. Mm-hmm. The other thing is Jocelyn may be low in certain amino acids like tryptophan,
right,
which is the precursor to serotonin.
Right.
And, you know, she may benefit from either taking tryptophan supplements or 5-hydroxytryptophan supplements. Some people do better with one rather than the other and vice versa.
Right.
So that could be something. Cleaning up the diet, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find somewhat low serotonin with a more vegetarian-based diet because of a possible lack of amino acids, which are the precursors to serotonin. So this is important. Cleaning up the diet. Food allergies and intolerances, you know, they don't always wind up as a stomach ache or a headache or sniffles. They could change your mood.
Right. And there's even evidence that there's a gut-brain connection, that serotonin, you know, as you often talk about in your lectures, the production of serotonin mostly occurs in your gastrointestinal tract at a higher level than it does even in the brain.
About 90% of
it. Yeah,
yeah. Isn't that wild? Yeah.
And you can, if you alter your microbiome, well, how do you do that? You change your diet, you add probiotics or fermented foods, and if you alter your microbiome, you can actually clear up your brain. Here's another angle on depression, and boy, we could do hours on depression, but depression may be an inflammatory disorder of the brain, and we now suspect that if we reduce inflammation throughout the body, the brain will do better and your mood will improve. But also if you use natural anti-inflammatories like curcumin. Curcumin has actually been shown to be a pretty good antidepressant, and it doesn't really work like the amino acids. It doesn't work like SAMI. It doesn't generate brain chemicals. It simply acts as a natural anti-inflammatory. And so...
And the form to take it in is not necessarily the Mareva product, but the cogumin.
Cogumin, which crosses the blood-brain barrier. That's what we use when we suspect that there are brain issues, inflammatory brain disorders, or depression, where we want to get the you know, Alzheimer's or dementia. Those are conditions where you
and our neurotransmitters need other support. They need more micronutrient support. Believe it or not, they need more B vitamins. They need vitamin C. They need magnesium and zinc.
Yes.
They also need some vitamin E as well.
Right.
So a lot of these are important. Getting those balanced is important. So these are the alternatives to Lexapro.
You know, this is not just a question. This is actually, and not even just an episode of Intelligent Medicine, this is actually a whole branch within integrative medicine called orthomolecular psychiatry, which is an effort to straighten out certain pathways, metabolic pathways in the body and in the brain through natural interventions that do not require drugs. And it's voluminous and way beyond the scope of just a quick answer. But the answer, bottom line, yes, you know, not everybody needs Lexapro to fix whatever ails them.
Right, right. Jocelyn, get a workup by an integrative physician or nutritionist. That will be a good start.
Great. All right.
Thank you for your question.
So we generally divide these podcasts into two parts, and we're going to go to part two. And just as a reminder, when we talk about esoteric supplements, products like Cogumin, they may be hard to access. They're products that sometimes are available only through doctors. We make these products, the vast majority of them, available to listeners as well via our website, drhoffman.com. You can click on the store, and you can browse there. And you also have a search box there, and you can plug in whatever you're looking for. And you're likely to find it at drhoffman.com. All right. Thanks for joining us for part one of today's podcast. Give us a hint as to what we're going to tackle in part two.
Yeah. Any help for hidradenitis suppurativa?
Wow. Okay.
Oh.
That's a nasty one. That even sounds nasty. We'll find out what it is in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.